So today I wanted to talk about compassion for ourselves. And this is something that many of us find very difficult when we first come to training and often for some time afterwards. And it's something that I struggled with a lot. In my early days of Buddhist practice, I used to wonder, if I came across myself sitting on a park bench, what would be my impressions of this person? And I realised that I felt I wouldn't be comfortable with them, I wouldn't trust them, I wouldn't want to get to know them because... And I think many of us can come to realise that that's actually how we feel about ourselves. Learning to have compassion for ourselves is a crucial aspect of training. And the struggle we can have with this was illustrated for me when I started in Buddhism. I started in another tradition. And in that tradition, there was a meditation practice called the Metta Bhavana, where you start by generating compassion for yourself, and then you expand it out from there. And when I tried to do this, I often found that I couldn't get past the first stage. I couldn't get past the stage of having compassion for myself, or else I just had to skip that stage and move on. And actually, talking about it, I found that that was quite a common difficulty. It wasn't just me. And I think that practice points to the fact that having compassion for ourselves is vital if we're going to have compassion for others. Turning the stream of compassion within is an initial step. It's not something we sort of tack on a bit later down the line. But we don't have to wait until we have compassion for ourselves before we can have compassion for others, before we can help others. If I'm feeling grumpy, pointing myself in the direction of being kind to someone else is good to do. It may help me feel better, might give me a bit of a warm glow. But we have to be careful. We have to be aware of what's going on inside us when we're trying to be compassionate to others. Do I want to get something from this exchange? Am I expecting gratitude? Is helping others an antidote for me feeling unworthy in some way? The key is that we have to come to know ourselves, our needs, our motivations. Acknowledge what we find within ourselves and accept that. If we develop true compassion for ourselves, it can help us move forward in a number of ways. What we learn to accept in ourselves, we can accept in others. We can empathise with them. And when we're rooted in a compassionate heart, that's a trustworthy basis on which to act, to discern what's good to do. And gradually, compassion for ourselves, for others, it becomes a natural expression of our life. So how do we find compassion for ourselves? How do we learn to be kind to ourselves, to not give ourselves a hard time? Well, these days, various approaches are available. There's a lot of self-help books and exercises to develop compassion. But it won't surprise you to know that I'm going to focus on meditation today. And in our tradition, the meditation that we do is Zazen, of course. It's not the Metta Bhavana. We're not trying to manufacture or develop compassion. We're not trying to be compassionate to ourselves or to others. In Zazen, we explore what is here now, and we start with what we find in ourselves. We start by being willing not to walk away from that self sitting on the park bench that I described earlier. We explore this sense of discomfort that we may have with ourselves, the sense of worthlessness. And when we take up meditation, we often come to realise actually how unpleasant it is inside our heads. all the unkind thoughts, the judgments, the complaining, the criticisms of others. And worse than all of that may be the voice of self-criticism that we hear. It wasn't until I'd been meditating for a while that I realised how loud and all-pervading that voice actually was. It was like having a parrot on my shoulder that was always predicting and confirming my failures, saying things like, "I knew you'd make a right pig's ear of that. Why on earth did you do that? You're always doing that sort of thing. Don't you ever learn?" etc., etc. And actually, as we meditate, we become more tuned into that, more aware of it, and it can be quite dispiriting at times. It helped me a bit when somebody pointed out that only I can see what's going on inside my head. It's exactly the same for other people. And that helped me to be a little bit more forgiving and understanding of myself. To have compassion for ourselves, we have to start by noticing the judgments and the opinions. Acknowledge them, accept them, let them pass. See the comparisons that we make with other people, both favourable and unfavourable. See the expectations we have, the disappointments. Question all the unkind and unhelpful thoughts that come up. Just ask, is that really so? And work on not adding an extra layer of judging ourselves for having those thoughts. Not to be saying, well, if I was really training properly, this sort of thing wouldn't arise. Much of the time, having compassion for ourselves is about sitting with fear. And we can come to see how fear underpins so much of our speech and our actions. And so we can have more sympathy with ourselves when we see how scared we are for much of the time. Even if what we're afraid of is something as mundane as being inconvenienced a bit. And as we go on with training, that voice of self-criticism becomes less insistent. It becomes intermittent. And I remember the day when I realised that the parrot wasn't there on my shoulder anymore. It felt like a reign of tyranny was over. And the voice still pops up occasionally, but that's okay. I know I don't have to listen to it. I don't have to believe it. Not to have this sort of constant undermining of ourselves is a step forward, but there's more to do. And for me, a key area when looking at having compassion for ourselves is what we do to ourselves when we feel we've blown it, when we've made a mistake. And the common one is perhaps that we've got angry, we've lost our temper. And these are really crucial moments, because it's at times like this that we have a tendency to really give ourselves a hard time, to feel that we've failed. And the voice of self-criticism can return with a vengeance and can cause us to doubt the value of practice and our ability to train. We can find ourselves saying, well, I've been training all these years and yet I still behave like that. I'm hopeless. And then these thoughts get mixed in with all the other thoughts and feelings that have been stirred up by the incident. And there's a real maelstrom going on inside our heads. But in the middle of all the raging that's going on, there's part of us that knows it's our choice to continue. And part of us can feel how unpleasant it is to be angry and sulky and know that we don't want that. And as things begin to settle, I often find myself saying something like 100 times down, 101 times back up. And you can use any numbers you like in there. The important thing is that the second one has to be larger than the first one. And we sit with all of this in Zazen, and at times it can be like sitting in the dark, sitting in blackness. But we can be willing to be in the dark. We don't have to rush it. But this is difficult, because sometimes we can fear that this is what I'm really like. The anger and hatred is the true me. But we can just let Zazen do its work and trust and the darkness gradually fades, turns grey, gets shot through with light, and eventually it disperses, dissolves, and flows away. There are many things that we can learn from episodes like this. It really is grist to the mill of training. And a major one for me was to accept that greed, anger, and delusion will continue to arise as long as I'm human. We so much want to find a state of perfection. It's what we hope training will bring to us, a time when greed and anger are no longer present. Then we can be comfortable with ourselves at last. But greed, anger, and delusion are part of being human, and they come to the fore in difficult situations. Greed and anger, fear and desire, they're part of our survival mechanism as humans. They arise from primitive structures in our brain. They're basic emotions, a response to danger. They're how we cope, fight or flight. And these days our dangers are not so much physical as mental, and so we channel our response differently. We become defensive, we protect ourselves. The unkind thoughts and the judgments, the criticisms, they're all part of this. The arrows that we fire these days tend to be mental ones rather than real ones, but they can be just as poisonous if we voice our thoughts or act on them. And they can be just as toxic for us if we let them fester in our minds. But because we're human, that's not the whole story. We have higher brain centres too. And as meditators, we have an extra, very powerful tool. Just because greed and anger arise, I don't have to follow up on it. I don't have to act on it. I've recently come to think of greed and anger as the first arising in a difficult situation. It's the natural response from the primitive areas of the brain. It's to be expected. It's as much a reflex as removing our hand from a burner. And this first arising doesn't have to be important. The key is what we do with this arising. We can accept it. We can become familiar with it. Oh yes, there it is again, anger. And we can let it pass through. And as we go on working at this, there are times when it does pass through harmlessly. And those times can become more frequent. But there will still be times when a situation touches us deeply, really presses our buttons. Greed and anger has us in its grip again, and we feel we've blown it. Well, then we can remind ourselves that this is part of our humanity. Dust ourselves down, pick ourselves up. The crucial thing is that we keep meditating with whatever arises in the moment. And we meditate with open hands. We sit with open hands, and I sort of visualise it like that. I let it actually be in open hands. And then see how the tendency is for our fingers to sort of start to flex around it to grasp on or to try and flick it away. But actually we can just relax our fingers. We're not trying to empty our hands. We can just let whatever is there, just let it be. And then Zazen can do its work. It can wash over it, wash through it. And as we go on doing this, we can gradually become more comfortable with ourselves. And paradoxically, it's easier to let go of a self that we're comfortable with. A self that we're uncomfortable with, we may want to be rid of, but it will keep coming back. And the more we struggle with it, the more forcefully it will come back. A self we can relax with is actually easier to just let it be, let it pass away. At this point, it's probably worth saying it can be surprisingly difficult. We can be surprisingly resistant to being compassionate to ourselves. Not only do we back away when compassion is shown to us, but we can also back away from the suggestion that we should be kind to ourselves. There may be many reasons for this, some of which may be obvious from the start of training, some I've already touched on. Perhaps we feel that it's selfish or self-indulgent to be kind to ourselves, that we should really be putting others' needs before our own. Or perhaps we feel it's weak or soft to be kind to ourselves. What we really need to do is pull ourselves together and push harder to achieve what we want to. Or perhaps we feel that we deserve to suffer. We don't deserve compassion because we're such a horrible person. If we have these sorts of drivers behind us, they often lead us to burn ourselves out. So part of having compassion for ourselves is that we know our limitations. And sometimes the good thing is to say no, to give ourselves a chance to rest. And if we can begin to develop compassion for ourselves, other reasons for resistance may emerge further on in the process. Perhaps the act of being compassionate to ourselves triggers deep memories of people who were kind to us in the past, but then mistreated or harmed us. And so confusion, fear, and anger can be there. Or perhaps self-compassion reveals a sadness and a yearning. It uncovers a desire to be loved or wanted, to want closeness or connectedness. So developing compassion may be quite an emotional experience. It may be overwhelming at times. So we have to tread carefully, not rush it. And this is part of learning to be kind to ourselves as well. So an aspect of the process is that there may be times when we're very tearful, especially perhaps if we go away on retreat. Well, that's okay. We can let it be, not indulge it, but not be ashamed either. Just let the tears be and pass through. And perhaps we don't know exactly why the tears are there. Well, if a reason presents, that's fine, but we don't need to look for one. It's just, this is how it is for now, and we can accept it. It often seems to be something to do with opening up and barriers falling away. Along similar lines, I was recently reading something about near-death experiences. Now, whatever explanation we may have for near-death experience, it's very striking that many people who go through this feel themselves completely altered. And while one element that's very common is that during the experience, the people feel themselves surrounded by unconditional love, non-judgmental, non-discriminating. They don't have to prove themselves worthy of earning this love. And this is a typical description. I felt myself completely enveloped in a sea of unconditional love and acceptance. I was able to look at myself with fresh eyes, and I saw that I was a beautiful being of the universe. I understood that just the fact that I existed made me worthy of this tender regard rather than judgment. I didn't need to do anything specific. I deserved to be loved simply because I existed. Nothing more and nothing less. This was rather a surprising realization for me, because I'd always thought I needed to work at being lovable. So not surprisingly, an experience like this can radically alter a person's perceptions, change their whole perspective on life. And we might feel, if only we could do this, know this for ourselves, without necessarily having to go through the near-death experience. Well, we can, because Zazen profoundly changes our perceptions of ourself and the universe. We can come to look at ourselves with fresh eyes. It's not that we go searching for unconditional love, although there are times when it may be there for us as an experience. But Zazen is utter acceptance. We can come to realise that we are worthy of love and tender regard. It may be more gradual than going through a near-death experience, but it's possible. As meditators, though, we have to go further. There's another strand for us. Because it's not about finding a self that we can be comfortable with. It's not even about finding unconditional love. There's also the question, who or what is this self that we are having compassion for? And it doesn't work if we say to ourselves, well, I know that the self is an illusion. I know there's no self really. It doesn't work if we try to jump ahead to an ideal of no self, because that in itself is an illusion. Instead, we have to explore the self in the nitty-gritty of everyday life, in the way that I've been describing. We address the question in Zazen by not holding on to any self. What is here now? What is the self of the moment? And if that's a hurt, offended self that's becoming angry, well, that's what we sit with and accept. We sit in the darkness if necessary. We sit with open hands. And the self can arise and pass, come and go. We can keep the self permeable. I've been finding that the permeable self can be quite a helpful concept in Zazen. It's a step on from a separate self. It's an expression of acceptance. We can see where the barriers are and let them dissolve. We can be willing not to know, willing to be empty. There need be no separation between me and the universe. And so we can come to know the openness and the interconnectedness that's the basic nature of life and reality. And compassion is a major expression of that. Compassion for ourselves, compassion for others. There's no separation, not two, there's just compassion. And it flows quite naturally if it's not blocked. In the writings of our tradition, it's said, to be compassionate is to respond by fully utilising all that one has, one knows, and one is. This is true compassion, flowing from Zazen and manifesting as perceptual action.